Cool. Okay, so I'm going to talk about some of the practical issues that we came across in reducing epoxy data from this MOA microlensing event that Dave talked about. It's work done by myself and my grad student Praveen Kandurthy at University of Washington. He's the guy that's actually done most of the grunt work and is figuring out the practicalities of how to deblend defocused crowded field images. And of course, working with Dave and the folks who discovered the event in the first place. My background was kind of in doing microlensing as for my PhD thesis, and so I worked on a lot of PSF photometry in ground-based focused images. And Praveen and I have been working on doing transit timing variations, which are defocused ground-based observations, and so we decided we might actually have something to contribute to this analysis. So as Dave mentioned, microlensing is a time variable, essentially strong lensing event, right? And the separation of the images is about micro to milli arc seconds. And therefore, if you can, essentially you're sensitive to parallaxes on that same scale, milli to micro arc seconds. And so a satellite in our solar system actually allows us to get unique constraints on the lensing system. So this is the event that Dave mentioned, MOA Bulge 266 from 2009. And I think the way the events went down was they found the planetary deviation here. I think 3 days later, Dave talked to the epoxy folks and asked requested observations of the system. I think 7 days after the event, or after the deviation, they agreed to do it. 17 days later, there was some fail-safe mechanism engaged. And I think in the end, 20 after the planetary deviation, we got our epoxy data. And it's on the trailing arm of the event, but it's only 2 days long, right? 2 days worth of data. And so it's not the most, it doesn't constrain the entirety of the event, but it's what we've got. And we've got to show that we can analyze it such that, you know, in the future we can get data, you know, here or here, or essentially covering the entirety of the event, right? Which would be really slick. So this is a summary of the data that we've got. We got about 4,000 images taken over 2 days, again, over that trailing, falling part of the microlensing event. And the hope is that we can resolve the current degeneracies in the microlensing fit. Okay, there's essentially two models that are almost equivalently, that have essentially the same chi-squareds, right? One has a mass ratio of 5.3 times 10 to the 5. One has a mass ratio of 5.7 times 10 to the 5. And they imply, you know, slightly different masses for the planet, but all around, you know, 10 Earth masses, okay? And the hope is that these epoxy data can discriminate between the two. Between the two models, we expect about a 7% difference in the brightness at the location of epoxy, right, during the time the observations were taken, because the magnification will have been somewhat different between the two models. And because of this, the absolute calibration of the brightness of the star is essential, right, to be able to discriminate between these models. Because there's a degeneracy between how bright the star looks in the epoxy images and how much it's magnified at that point in time. We expect about a similar difference in the slope of the event during the time epoxy observed it. The time of peak magnification is different by a couple days, and therefore, essentially between Earth and epoxy, and therefore you expect to be seeing a slightly different slope at the time of the observations. Okay, so here is an image of the field, and that guy is a star that's lensed. Okay, and so you can see, first of all, it's blended with this neighbor here, and the kind of comparison stars that you want to be using for calibration are also to some degree blended. Okay, and so this is a bit of a difficult problem. These are the issues that I guess I went through in my head when I saw these data. I'm used to dealing with ground-based data, so for me this was a high fraction of cosmic rays in the images. For people who look at more space-based data, I don't know if that's the case or not. The pointing's not stable, right? The exposure times are short. This is, I think, something Jesse pointed out as well. The star one is around the field, and it samples these known sensitivity variations in the detector. Okay, something that's been discussed, I think, described by this paper by Sarah Ballard et al. The data are out of focus. The telescope's out of focus, which makes using a PSF model for this analysis difficult. Okay, if we all had our way, we'd just drop an aperture down and be happy with it. And thankfully, Richard Berry has put together essentially 10 times oversampled empirical models of of different stars, right? GJ436, XO2, and whatnot. And it's something that we essentially are going to have to use because we have a crowded field, which means that PSF photometry is absolutely necessary. We can't just drop apertures down and measure the brightnesses of the stars. We have to deblend them, okay? And so this is an additional complication that comes because we're observing towards a galactic bulge. Okay, one thing that I'm not sure was mentioned is that the epoxy PSF is dependent on the spectral energy distribution of the thing it's looking at, okay? For example, for GJ436, which is this guy right here, nice and red, you can tell it's got a lot more power in the middle compared to XO2, which, you know, where there's essentially less power in the core of the PSF. That's right, sir. This is the clear filter. Yep, that's right. These data were taken unfiltered. Yeah. Beggars can't be filtered or something like that. So neither of these two is exactly appropriate for the color of the MOA lensed star, which has V minus I of 1.8. And so what we did is we ended up taking essentially a hybrid PSF, which is 80% of GJ436 and 20% of XO2, to make something that's got, you know, a little bit more power in the center, but not as much as this guy right there. And so that composite object should have about the same color as the lensed source star. Okay, so cosmic rays, you know, this is something that you can take care of pretty easily because the PSF is large, right? You can essentially look for any feature that's sharper than, you know, something with a field full of half max of 9 pixels or so. And flag those as cosmic rays, mask them, interpolate them, and they kind of go away really nicely. I thought this was a fun little exercise. Next up, we have to deal with the pointing. This is the wander of the star across the field in our 4,000 images, as well as all the comparison stars, okay? And it's been pointed out before, the sensitivity of the chip varies wildly, well, maybe not wildly, by a couple percent, substantially, across the focal plane. And so each one of these stars is going to be sampling essentially a different sensitivity at every observation. And so we've got to build some sort of model, like has been done by Sarah Ballard et al., on what the relative sensitivities are. And you can see the fill factor of our stars is not, we don't fill the entire focal plane, so we can't really build this entire model with the data that we have. So we've got to do the best we can. And I guess I'll describe that in a bit later. And so I mentioned we need to have a PSF model, and I also mentioned that Richard Berry has built kind of these super sampled 600 by 600 pixel PSFs appropriate for various source stars, okay, which represents essentially a 60 by 60 pixel region on the image. So what we can do is we can shift this model by 5 pixels, you know, left, right, up, and down, which represents in the focal plane a half pixel shift, downsample this to 60 by 60 pixels, and then we can create a single PSF model using these 9 images, right? For example, using something like this. So this is the main PSF model we've used right there. This is the PSF model essentially shifted by half a pixel up, downsampled, half a pixel to the left, half a pixel to the right, et cetera. And so we can build a PSF model using, for example, DAOphot. Okay. One thing that we really, or one characteristic of the software we need to be able to do this, is that we can represent this really complex PSF internally. Right? The software knows how to represent this funky-looking defocused donut. And the advantage of DAOphot is that it uses, you know, first of all, an empirical model, uses some Moffat function or whatnot, but critically, it also has a lookup table, right, which is a correction between what it actually measures in the image and this empirical model. So DAOphot can actually represent this defocused funky donut model internally. And the reason we've actually kind of done this super sampling, well, maybe not super sampling, but slight dithering of the PSF model, is that DAOphot kind of stores its internal PSF model a factor of two oversampled. So this was a way to essentially turn this factor of 10 oversampled PSF into a factor of two oversampled DAOphot PSF model. After that, it's actually a really straightforward thing to do. You run find, you measure the brightness and centroid of these things in the images. You use the detections in all the images to find a geometric transformation between them. Okay, this essentially allows you to align all these images where the star is kind of jittering around. And then Peter Stetson has written this really cool piece of software called AllFrame. Okay, and what this does is it runs photometry on all images simultaneously. Okay, using the geometric transform, essentially does photometry on this one star on the entire stack at once, right? If there's two stars blended with each other, it deblends them similarly throughout the entire stack of images at once. Okay, and so you get much better centroiding and deblending, and this centroiding and deblending is consistent across all frames. Okay. And one of the previous questions was, can we use ground-based data to do a better job of deblending these defocused space-based data? And using AllFrame, we actually can, right? What we would do is we would take the ground-based CTIO data, have them make a master star list, register the epoxy images to that master star list, and then you do photometry on all the stars simultaneously at once, okay? And that's essentially a longer-term goal, something we haven't quite done yet because we haven't wrapped in the ground-based data to this epoxy analysis. How do we make the light curve? We don't have the full focal plane sensitivity model, essentially the diagram that was showed in Jesse's talk. We'd love to get it, if possible. We've sent you guys emails, but we're still waiting to hear back. So what we've done in the meantime is we've just used a detrending model for the relative calibration of these pixels, okay? We do a linear regression, which is a function of the absolute x and y position of the star in the focal plane. And of course, since the fill factor is not complete in this focal plane, we can't do this 100% exactly right. So this step's currently incomplete, and we're trying to work or find better ways to do this linear regression to get rid of essentially the red noise. We've done absolute calibration with respect to ground-based data, so essentially, you know, the brightnesses and colors of the stars from CTIO, and the brightnesses and the colors of the same stars as measured in epoxy. This is also preliminary, and we want to include more passbands worth of data to do a better job of color calibration. So here are the basic light curve fits. Aperture photometry is on top, so if we just slap down an aperture on all these stars, here's what we get, you know, average error bar of, you know, 0.05 magnitudes. And if we do PSF photometry, the average error bar is a factor of 2 and a bit smaller. And we get a much better constraint on the slope of this light curve, and a much better constraint in the intercept, essentially the brightness, excuse me, of the light curve. And so essentially, yeah, the improvement between, you know, this right here and this right here is essentially a proxy for how good of a job we're doing with this PSF photometry, and how much and how good we should be able to constrain the differences between these two models, the two microlensing fits. And again, just as a quick point of to make a quick point, the intercept of this is, you know, constrained by the data, you know, to high precision, and therefore the calibration, the absolute calibration of these data is going to be essential to help determine, discriminate between the two different microlensing fits. This is just a plot of the residuals around the fit. You know, there's some degree of red noise still, you can see, in the aperture photometry, and it's a bit lower amplitude in the PSF photometry, but it's not zero. Okay, we still have to do a better job of doing this detrending. So that's it. The summary is that, you know, we can do PSF photometry in these crowded fields with defocused PSFs and poor tracking, and with an SED-dependent PSF. And so therefore, you know, epoxy is actually a legitimate resource to do a study of these galactic bulge microlensing events. We still have some additional things to address, right, to really reach the Poisson limit, including, you know, can we control the stability? Well, I don't think we can do that. Therefore, we need to build models of the focal plane, the focal plane sensitivity. And this is something where essentially, you know, a directed series of tests would be extraordinarily useful, right? Trailing stars across the image, you know, walk it across the star field, do something where you can actually do a systematic study of the relative pixel sensitivities in the focal plane. In general, we would probably want to, you know, we had a first test of how can we, you know, communicate with the epoxy team and get data and turn that into actual images. And, you know, the first step worked. I mean, it took us about 27 days to get the data. And, of course, we'd want to definitely improve the communication channel. And we'd also want to spend a bit more time on the event, right? I think, you know, having two straight days was probably almost overkill. Right? Yeah, it would have been much better to have like a half a day in four different locations of the light curve. Right? Essentially, you want to see what the derivative of this thing is over far more than 2 days. And particularly, you want to observe the brightness of the star at baseline when it's not been lensed anymore. because that will help you essentially with the magnification versus brightness in the epoxy filter's degeneracy. So that's it. Yeah.
For returning to the event, does it with the doing the data reduction this way, is your stability still good if you if epoxy went off and did other things and came back a week later? Or
I think so. Yeah, that shouldn't be an issue.
It's very stable.
I mean, well, I don't know how stable the focal plane is like intrinsically, but there's nothing in the data analysis that would cause problems with that happening.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
You described the color dependence of the PSF.
Right.
So can you get away with using one PSF for all stars in the field because these are all bulge stars at roughly the same magnitude?
That's absolutely
correct.
They
have very similar colors, so you need only one PSF for all of them.
Yeah, so optimally, right, what you want to do is you want to have a PSF model per star in the field, right, because every star is a different color. Or you want to limit your analysis to things that are of similar color. For example, I think this field is really highly populated with clump giants that are red and about the same color as the target star. And so we could certainly limit our analysis to those stars only. But at least for these Lycurgs here, we've used, all the stars that were available.
So if you had a blend with a star of a very different color, you might have problems.
Then you'll have to, if you really want to do it, damn right, you've got to use two different PSFs for that.
Yeah.
And that's tough.
Okay.
Because we'd have to, in some sense, edit the software, because I don't think the...
So an additional comment. I don't know whether it's really applicable, but you could have a look at algorithms that have been developed for the joint analysis of high-resolution images, say from HST, with data cubes from integral field units, where you have also the problem of trying to do a joint analysis of a high-resolution image and a data cube of low-resolution images.
Mm-hmm.
So a number of algorithms have been developed for that case, and that maybe there's something of interest in there.
Okay.